3, 2, 1, liftoff.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Welcome to a History of the Space Race podcast, episode 73, Apollo 14. In 1971, the Apollo program reached maturity with two more landings on the moon, Apollo 14, which launched in January 1971, and Apollo 15, which launched in July 1971. Apollo 14 was a critical mission for NASA to recover from the failure of Apollo 13, while Apollo 15 was another critical mission to expand the duration and scope of lunar surface missions to get the critical scientific payoff that had been so long promised by the Apollo program. Starting first with Apollo 14. Apollo 14 had been scheduled originally to launch in October or November of 1970. The near disaster of Apollo 13, however, caused significant delays as NASA conducted an accident investigation and made revisions to the launch vehicle and the spacecraft to prevent a repeat of the accident. NASA made the most extensive changes to the service module, where the oxygen tank had exploded during Apollo 13. One major revision was to add a third oxygen tank in the service module located on the opposite side of the spacecraft, so a single explosion or accident would no longer knock out the entire oxygen supply. In addition, the third oxygen tank would be capable of being isolated from the fuel cells and other tanks in the case of an emergency. The fans used to stir the oxygen in the tanks were also removed, and the wiring given added insulation. NASA also added more batteries to the command module for more emergency power, and the engineers also made power transfer between the lunar module and command module easier. Future missions would also carry an emergency supply of 5 gallons of water in the command module, since drinking water had run dangerously short during Apollo 13. There were also fixes implemented to the Saturn V launch vehicle. During Apollo 13, the inboard engine of the second stage S2 had turned off due to high oscillation. Prior to Apollo 13, there was already a hardware fix to reduce the oscillation, but there was no time to implement the fix before Apollo 13 launched. The fix was implemented for Apollo 14. The changes that NASA made to the Apollo 14 launch vehicle and spacecraft were important. NASA took its time before returning to space, as the belief was that this mission could not fail. Two failed Apollo missions in a row could very well spell the end of the Apollo program altogether, particularly as the program and NASA were under increasing scrutiny with budget cuts and the nation's interests focused on other, more pressing matters. The crew selected for Apollo 14 created some controversy. The commander was Alan Shepard, the command module pilot was Stuart Roosa, and the lunar module pilot was Edgar Mitchell. Shepard, if you will recall, was the first American to go to space during the Mercury program aboard Freedom 7 way back in May 1961, just 1 month after Soviet Yuri Gagarin reached orbit. Shepard had flown on a 15-minute suborbital flight, which Nikita Khrushchev had derided as the American flea hop into space. We have not heard from Shepard since his pioneering flight, because in late 1963, he was diagnosed with Meniere's disease. This was a condition caused by fluid buildup in the inner ear. The result was that Shepard began to experience extreme dizziness and nausea, and he could hear loud noises in his ear. If the symptoms occurred while he was in space, it could lead to a potentially fatal accident. Shepard at first tried to conceal the condition, but he eventually had no choice and told Deke Slayton, the man who selected astronauts for missions. As there was no known cure for Meniere's disease at the time, Shepard's flight status was revoked. Shepard then became the chief of the astronaut office, basically Deke Slayton's boss. In 1968, Shepard learned of a new type of surgery that could cure Meniere's disease. This involved cutting a tiny hole to reach the inner ear to remove excess fluid. Shepard opted to undergo the surgery, and in May 1969, Shepard's flight status was restored. This was when Shepard and Slayton made some questionable choices. As I mentioned a few episodes ago, Slayton had developed a practice where, in general, an astronaut had to serve as a member of a backup crew before being assigned to a prime crew for an Apollo launch 3 missions later. Well, Shepard and Slayton, who together headed the astronaut office that chose who should go on what missions, decided that Shepard should be placed on the next available Apollo mission, Apollo 13. After selecting Shepard for Apollo 13, they also selected Stuart Roosa to be the command module pilot. Roosa had an interesting background as a smoke jumper, putting out forest fires, before joining the Air Force. Roosa was eventually recruited to NASA as part of the 5th astronaut class in 1966. Roosa had never been to space before. Meanwhile, the last time that Shepard had been to space was nearly a decade ago, and his experience was limited to that 15-minute suborbital flea hop. Shepard was little better than a rookie at this point. To compensate for the lack of experience between Shepard and Roosa, for the third member of Apollo 13, Slayton tried to recruit James McDivitt as the lunar module pilot. McDivitt was a veteran of the Gemini 4 mission and had served as commander of Apollo 9. McDivitt, however, balked at the idea that Shepard should command an Apollo mission given his lack of experience. So Slayton and Shepard had no choice but to select someone else, Edgar Mitchell, to serve as the lunar module pilot. Mitchell was an odd one. Mitchell was also part of that 5th astronaut class recruited in 1966 and had never been to space before. But as would become clear after the Apollo 14 mission, Mitchell had a strong interest in paranormal activities. Later in life, he would found the Mind Science Institute that tried to research mind reading and telepathic capabilities. He also believed in something called remote healing and was thoroughly convinced that aliens were hidden in Roswell, New Mexico. In his personal life, he would also divorce his wife, remarry, divorce again before remarrying again to a Playboy model. Mitchell is certainly one of the more interesting characters to have gone to the moon. So after recruiting Shepard, Roussa, and Mitchell, Slayton informed George Miller, the director of the Office of Manned Spaceflight, of the selection for the Apollo 13 mission. Now, Miller was the one who balked. He rejected the crew assignment as all three astronauts were far too inexperienced. Shepard was the only one who had been to space, and that was just barely, and he had been out of training for many years now. Shepard would also be the oldest American astronaut at that time. The crew assignment also just smacked of favoritism over merit, not to mention a clear conflict of interest in the selection process, seeing as how Shepard was Slayton's boss. In the end, a compromise was worked out, whereby the crew assigned at that time to Apollo 14, that was Jim Lovell, Fred Hayes, and Ken Mattingly, would be moved up to Apollo 13, and Shepard, Roussa, and Mitchell would take Apollo 14 instead. This would give Shepard and his crew more time to train for the mission. And Lovell, for his part, agreed to take Apollo 13, reportedly commenting, "What could possibly be the difference between Apollo 14 and Apollo 13? And here, I think it is worth dwelling on the possibilities of what could have happened had Shepard and his crew been on the disastrous flight of Apollo 13 rather than Lovell and his crew. Lovell was NASA's most experienced astronaut at the time of Apollo 13, whereas Shepard would have been the least experienced of all the astronauts who had been to space. It is fair to ask whether Shepard would have been able to lead his crew calmly and safely back to Earth the way Lovell did. And I think this highlights the importance of making decisions based on merit, not favoritism. You never know what is going to happen. As with every mission, the crew decided on the call signs for the command and lunar modules. Shepard largely deferred to his respective pilots for the names. Roussa decided to name the command module that he would be responsible for flying Kitty Hawk, after Roussa's hometown and where the Wright brothers conducted the first controlled powered flight. Mitchell named the lunar module that he would be piloting Antares, after the star he would be using to orient the spacecraft when landing on the moon. Apollo 14 would be the last of what NASA called the H-type Apollo missions. The H-type missions, which included Apollo 12 and Apollo 13, were to demonstrate precision landings on the moon, followed by a 2-day stay on the lunar surface with 2 EVAs. Initially, Apollo 14 was to land at the Littrell crater in the Sea of Serenity, which is near the center of the moon at a slightly higher latitude than the Sea of Tranquility, where Apollo 11 landed. After the failure of Apollo 13, however, Apollo 14 was redirected to the Fra Mauro region, which had been Apollo 13's target. The decision was based on a call by the geologists, who considered the Fra Mauro area to be scientifically more important than the Littrell crater. Geologists expected that the astronauts at the Fra Mauro crater would be able to recover material from deep beneath the lunar surface, exposed by a major meteor impact in the past. The only change from Apollo 13 was to land slightly closer to the cone of the crater in the Fra Mauro Formation. Although Shepard and his crew had swapped places with the original Apollo 14 crew to give Shepard more time to train, Shepard apparently did not appreciate the scientific training he was receiving. He showed little interest in geology, and his attitude infected Mitchell, the only other astronaut who'd be landing on the moon with him during Apollo 14. The lack of appreciation and possibly even disdain for the geological training would come to mar the success of the mission. NASA imposed one other change in procedure for Apollo 14 as a result of Apollo 13. 3 weeks before launch, Shepard, Roussa, and Mitchell entered a limited quarantine. They lived at the Kennedy Space Center, and NASA limited their contacts to immediate family members, technicians, and those directly involved in the astronauts' training, all of whom were screened for infectious diseases. These changes were made after Ken Mattingly was pulled from Apollo 13 after he had been exposed to the measles days before launch. On January 31st, 1971, Apollo 14 launched. After a slight delay due to weather, Apollo 14 made it into orbit. After performing the translunar injection maneuver with the S-4B rocket stage, Apollo 14 was on its way to the moon. On their way to the moon, Apollo 14 did encounter a problem attempting to dock with the lunar module during the transposition maneuver to recover the lunar module from the S-4B. Roussa piloted Kitty Hawk toward Antares for docking, but each time he failed to achieve a hard dock. So, to back up and explain a little bit, each docking has two phases. The first phase is a soft dock. The soft dock is achieved by sticking the probe, which points outward from the command module, into the drogue on the lunar module. This is a soft docking. The next phase, a hard dock, happens when the drogue pulls the probe in. Then a dozen latches will activate and clamp down to hold the two spacecraft together. Roussa was able to get a soft dock, but the latches refused to clamp down for a hard docking. After making half a dozen failed docking attempts, concerns grew that they would not be able to dock with the lunar module, which would mean an automatic end to the mission. Finally, at Mission Control's instruction, the crew retracted the docking probe to skip the soft docking phase. Instead, Roussa would just enter the docking port and try to go for a hard docking immediately. When he tried, this time the docking worked, and they were able to retrieve the lunar module. The mission was back on. On February 4th, 1971, Apollo 14 entered lunar orbit. After making appropriate preparations, the moon landing began. Kitty Hawk and the service module began the first stage of the descent by bringing Antares, the lunar module, into a lower orbit. In prior landings, the lunar module had performed this initial descent on its own. For Apollo 14, Kitty Hawk would perform this initial descent for Antares to save fuel on the lunar module. Since Antares would be attempting to land in a relatively rough terrain, the mission controllers wanted to give Antares as much fuel reserve as possible so that the astronauts had extra time to find a flat area to land. After reaching the lower orbit, Antares undocked and prepared to begin the second phase of the landing, the powered descent maneuver. But as Antares approached the lunar surface, Shepard and Mitchell on board the Antares encountered two serious problems that nearly caused them to abandon the moon landing effort. First, the computer on Antares kept receiving a signal to abort. Mission Control theorized, and subsequent investigation would later confirm, that the abort signal was due to a faulty instrumentation. Basically, it turned out that there was a small ball of solder that had shaken loose inside the control panel and was completing the circuit between the switch and the contact plate, causing a false abort signal. The astronauts were able to confirm Mission Control's theory when they tapped the control panel, moving the ball of solder and turning the signal off. But the ball of solder kept moving and the circuit was completed again, sending the false signal. As long as the abort signal was being sent, the astronauts could not fire the descent engine to start the powered descent. If they did, the lunar module's computer was hardwired to separate from the descent stage and fire the ascent stage engine to bring the astronauts back to the command module. With literally only minutes to go before it was time to fire the descent stage engine, the pressure was on to find a solution. An MIT software programmer, Don Iles, came up with a solution that saved the entire mission. Since the abort procedure was hardwired into the spacecraft, they couldn't change the programming on the fly. Instead, Iles instructed Mission Control to have the astronauts have the computer enter into a program that is only supposed to be used after an abort has already happened. By doing this, they were tricking the lunar module's computer into thinking that the abort had already happened, so it would not activate the hardwired abort procedure to eject the descent stage. I guess this makes up for MIT almost causing an abort to Apollo 11 due to the software programming error. This, however, was only the first of two serious problems during the descent maneuver. The second problem occurred during descent when Antares pitched over so the radar could scan the lunar surface. At this point, however, the radar failed. The astronauts had to cycle the circuit breaker on the radar to get it to activate. By the time the radar turned on, they were only 6,700 meters above the lunar surface. Mission rules dictated that they would have had to abort if they were only 3,000 meters above the surface. This was Apollo 14's second close call. Despite the problems during descent, Shepard managed to make the most precise landing of all Apollo landings. While on the surface, Shepard and Mitchell would conduct two EVAs. On February 5th, after a delay due to a temporary loss of communication between Mission Control and Antares, the first EVA began. As Shepard stepped out of Antares, he said, quote, "And it's been a long way, but we're here," end quote. Shepard and then Mitchell became the fifth and sixth men to walk on the moon. Shepard and Mitchell spent their time deploying the Apollo Lunar Surface Experiments Package, planting the US flag, and offboarding their equipment. One of the pieces of equipment they offloaded was the Modular Equipment Transporter. This was a two-wheeled contraption that had two other legs to provide stability. In short, NASA had gone all the way to the moon to deploy one of the most simplistic and ancient forms of transportation, a rickshaw. The rickshaw was deployed to help the astronauts carry equipment, tools, and samples to and from the lunar module after the astronauts on previous missions reported trouble carrying everything. The two rubber tires on the rickshaw marked the first time that any tires were used on the moon. This first EVA to set up their equipment was completed after nearly 5 hours. For the second EVA, Shepard and Mitchell planned to reach the rim of the Cone Crater, where geologists back on Earth hoped they would recover some critical samples that would tell them how the moon and the Earth formed. Shepard and Mitchell, however, encountered problems during the journey to the Cone Crater. The area they landed on had a slowly undulating surface that was not detected from orbital satellite photos. The undulations in the ground made it difficult to judge distances or identify landmarks. As Shepard and Mitchell made their way, they kept crossing one ridge after another, expecting to see the rim of the crater after stepping on top of the next ridge. But each time they did not see the crater they were hoping to reach. The terrain also made it difficult for Shepard and Mitchell to estimate how far they had walked from Antares, and they generally overestimated the distance that they had traveled. Finally, beginning to experience exhaustion, Mission Control told them to stop where they were, collect samples, and then head back to the lunar module. Subsequent analysis of satellite photos taken after Apollo 14 would reveal that Shepard and Mitchell had come within just 65 feet of the crater's rim, sorely disappointing geologists back home. What was worse was Shepard and Mitchell's failure to meticulously label the samples they had collected, making the value of the samples collected somewhat less than it could have been. And adding to the frustration was that Shepard and Mitchell collected relatively few samples. In total, they gathered only 10 kilograms, or about 22 pounds of samples. And the vast majority of that, 9 kilograms, or about 20 pounds, came from a single rock, which was subsequently dubbed Big Bertha. The disappointing haul was due in large part to the utter lack of interest that Shepard and Mitchell had shown to the scientific aspects of the mission. Disappointing as the collection was, it turns out that Big Bertha was of major scientific value. Decades after the Apollo 14 mission, an analysis of Big Bertha revealed that the rock probably came from the Earth, not the Moon. The composition of Big Bertha was far more similar to old rocks from Earth than any of the other lunar samples recovered. So the current belief is that Big Bertha came from a meteorite that originated from Earth. If correct, this would make Big Bertha the oldest known Earth rock, and the first Earth meteorite ever discovered. Shepard and Mitchell then made their way back to Antares. Before getting back inside, however, Shepard performed a rather famous stunt. Within view of the cameras they had set up near the landing site, Shepard pulled out a 6-iron golf club head that he had carried on the spacecraft and tied it to a sample tool to use as a handle. He then dropped two golf balls and took some one-handed swings, one-handed due to the limited movement allowed by his spacesuit. He ended up lobbing the first golf ball about 24 yards, and the second one about 40 yards away. Mitchell then joined in the athletic competition by throwing a lunar sample scoop like a javelin. Meanwhile, in lunar orbit, Roussa was performing extensive scientific experiments, mainly photography of the lunar surface. He also managed to identify where Antares had landed by spotting the glint of the sun shining off of Antares as he passed over. With the completion of the lunar surface mission, Shepard and Mitchell took off and rendezvoused with Kitty Hawk in the first direct orbital rendezvous over the moon. This was a rendezvous achieved before Antares completed a full orbit around the moon. There were no problems docking this time. Shepard and Mitchell transferred themselves, the lunar samples, and their equipment to the Kitty Hawk before jettisoning Antares, which then crashed on the lunar surface. The astronauts then made their way home on Kitty Hawk. During the journey home, the astronauts tested equipment that would be used for Apollo 15. They also simulated a loss of communication with mission control to practice emergency procedures in light of the Apollo 13 accident. Mitchell also performed an unsanctioned experiment of his own, one that he did not disclose to Mission Control or NASA until after the mission was over. He performed some ESP experiments by trying to send images of a deck of cards he brought with him to four people on Earth. On February 9th, Kitty Hawk splashed down in the Pacific Ocean. The crew was then quarantined in the Lunar Receiving Laboratory in Houston. Shepard, Roussa, and Mitchell would be the last Apollo crew quarantined after a mission to the moon, making them the only ones to be quarantined on both ends of the mission. The command module, Kitty Hawk, was eventually put on display at the Kennedy Space Center Museum, where you can still see it today. After returning to Earth, Roussa distributed some 500 tree seeds that he had brought with him on Kitty Hawk and kept in lunar orbit. Because Roussa had been a smoke jumper earlier in his career, he had an interest in forestry. Many of these seeds were planted and have grown into trees today, though the documentation on where these trees are located is not great. Although it does not appear that NASA sanctioned Roussa's distribution of what became known as the moon trees today, NASA is continuing Roussa's legacy. NASA placed 1,000 tree seeds on Artemis 1, which returned to Earth on December 11, 2022. Reportedly, these tree seeds will now be sent to the U.S. Forest Service for planting. Meanwhile, Shepard donated the makeshift golf club he used on the moon to the U.S. Golf Association Museum in New Jersey. Apollo 14 marked the start of astronauts starting to conduct some personal shenanigans on the moon. Shepard's unplanned golfing, Mitchell's unsanctioned ESP experiment, and Roussa's tree seeds distribution, though Roussa's tree seeds is probably the most innocent and well-meaning of all of these personal actions. These personal experiments and activities, however, will soon lead to scandals and accusations of corruption in the Apollo program. But I will cover that next time when I pick up with Apollo 15.